Don't have a quorum yet, but in the interest of honoring those who have been here on time, I want to get started. And we have had a few little technical difficulties in getting all the information we need from the Department of Finance ready for the start, too. So I know some of that will be showing up in a little bit, but I want to get started with the commissioner. And once we have a quorum, we'll go ahead and break and officially convene the meeting and do the minutes and then get back to the presentation on the governor's budget, which is the topic today. With that, Commissioner Ingerson, welcome back to the Ways and Means Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. The packet that's being passed around to you now is what we'll be working off of here, and it's some of these things may be familiar to you. Some of this is the slide presentation used by the governor. There are a few changes and some different things that are included in here. But, Mr. Chair and members, I'll try to maybe go through the slide presentation quickly so we get to your specific questions, because I know people probably have more specific questions since the budget has been out for several days now.
Okay.
Starting with the chart on the bottom of page one, you'll see that this is kind of to remind you that we were looking at a $700 million gap coming into this this session based on the November forecast, where we had spending exceeding revenue by $700 million. That's basically some of the problem that we're looking to solve here. But using this chart for a couple of minutes, I'd just like to say another thing here to clarify. In this budget plan, there's a lot of new spending, and spending has increased over the current biennium. But what we'll talk about sometimes is the relationship to the forecast, what we're doing to change what's in the forecast. And these two different reference points, I think, because you'll hear us talking about new spending and talking about cutting, mostly there's this $700 million is based on a forecast of current law spending and revenues, and we'll be explaining to you what we're doing in terms of the governor's recommendations relative to the forecast as well. So those two reference points will be, hopefully we'll try to make sure that we clarify so it doesn't create some confusion for people. But looking at the chart on the top of page two, you'll see that this is comparing, again, this is just looking at the forecast, where the forecast was growing over the current biennium. And this is just a little bit more of a breakdown looking at that relationship between revenue and spending in a couple of areas to I think, highlight some of the issues that we were dealing with in as part of the budget development process. We had taxes projected to increase again under current law, 7.9%. You'll see there, though, on the top, leading to showing the transfers and other funds, you can see that there's a drop of over $1.1 billion from what the last current biennium to 06-07.
We've got their Morse code going, it sounds like. Okay. All right. Maybe Kevin, you can grab that. All right. Hey, while we're doing that, why don't I just do a little bit of housekeeping business? We do have a quorum, I am told, so I will officially convene the meeting. Clerk will note the roll. And members, we've got the minutes of the meeting of January 24th before us. Any corrections, additions, or changes to the minutes? Would anyone like to move the minutes?
So moved.
Representative Sikora moves approval of the minutes of January 24th. See no discussion. All in favor of the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. And with that, I hear it is quieted down. We'll go back to the commissioner.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This chart on the top of page two is just breaking out some revenue and spending items to just note where we had some particular problems. You'll see, I think I was talking about that drop in transfers over 04-05 to 06-07. That billion plus there, or 74% drop in other revenues, is really primarily the tobacco funds, the tobacco endowment funds that were used to balance the budget in the 04-05 biennium. Again, noting that they're not available for 06-07. In addition to that, there were some other balances that were used. But this kind of leads us to a total revenue change of $2.8 billion, or 2.8%. Sorry, $800 million, 2.8%. And then down, looking at a couple of areas on the spending side, you'll see that spending was projected to grow $2.1 billion, or 7.6%. And therein, when you think about the relationship between revenues and spending, is the reason for the problem here. But just a couple of things on the spending side. You'll see that K-12 education spending, E-12 education spending, was projected to decline about 1.5%, $185 million. This is somewhat related to the both the school payment shift being bought back some in the 2004-05 biennium, but plus in addition declining student enrollment. The health and human services numbers, you'll see at 20% growth projected here. This again is the general fund, and maybe to be clear here, just at this point, to describe that there are some interactions that have been going on with this program between the general fund and the healthcare access fund, but this was a large portion, two-thirds of the total spending increase projected. Again, this is on the basis of November's forecast, and two-thirds of the spending growth in the health and human services area. The chart on the bottom of page 2 really describes the, again, kind of relating the changes in the governor's budget to the forecast. The forecast shortfall is $700 million. You can see there are spending cuts of about $426 million. There's new spending of about $476 million. Increased revenues in a number of areas, and I'll go through some of these highlights in these areas a little bit more. This is just kind of the higher level picture here. New gaming license revenue of $200 million, and then also about $220 million from the Healthcare Access Fund as a result of realigning some programs in that area. And I should say, Mr. Chairman and members, when we had the forecast, as I have described on the earlier slide, that's just the general fund, but also as a result of the November forecast, the Healthcare Access Fund had a balance of $224 million.
Excuse me, Representative Solberg, did you have a question?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, on the previous one, you talked about health and human services having a growth of 19.9, but all other at 10.3, and I think you just kind of skipped over. Give me a couple of all others.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, I think that there's a big piece of the all other that's actually in the criminal justice area, a couple things going on. Continuation of the court takeover has higher costs in the 06-07 biennium compared to 04-05. Also in the Department of Corrections, you'll see there's higher increase in 06-07 based primarily on increased inmate population. That's one of the areas where it's a little bit more significant growth. I think, the debt service number is in here. This was just really intended to kind of highlight the two largest areas of spending, E-12 education, health and human services, and then lumping all other. But you'll see some increase in the debt service area. Higher education. This is a place, again, where we're talking about the forecast. There's like about a couple hundred million dollars that was included in the forecast in higher education under the provision in law that requires us to include in the forecast the enrollment lag, the two-year enrollment lag for higher education. So that was a little over $200 million of that. So I think those are the big parts of that growth in the all other categories.
Okay. Please go ahead.
Okay. Mr. Chair and members, I'll move to the chart on page 3 on the top, just highlighting a couple of things about the governor's budget recommendations. You'll see that there's a balance, and we'll talk about this a little bit later as well, in the 08-09 biennium between positive revenues overspending. The deficit shortfall is eliminated. There's no general tax increase. And there are increases in spending in several areas that are priorities for the governor. And education, healthcare programs. Actually, when we look at the biennium to biennium change, you'll see there's still a fairly sizable spending increase in the healthcare program area, and then public safety, a couple of the things that I had mentioned earlier, corrections in that area and the courts. We tried to use a process of priority-based budgeting, asking the state agencies to prioritize their programs, and one of the things that the governor didn't want to do was some kind of across-the-board cut. So you'll see that there are places where there are increases in some agencies in their programs and places where there are decreases, and there is a range of percentages there. So this was really intended to highlight priorities and not do a general across-the-board. Now on the bottom of page 3, the chart, you'll see as much as we've been kind of talking about what we're doing to solve the $700 million gap, you can see from 2004-05 to 2006-07, there still is $1.6 billion in new spending, or 5.8%. That $1.6 billion compares to the 2.1 earlier on the chart that was forecast to grow. In particular, there's a couple of areas that I'll highlight more specifically when we get into those areas, in particular in the Health and Human Services area. But there's a lot of interaction with other funds. And so the line on the bottom of that chart on the bottom of page 3 is showing the total spending change for all funds, looking at the 2004-05 biennium comparing 2006-07, 2.8, almost $2.9 billion increase, or a 6.2%. So the all fund, what we describe as the all funds budget for the state for the 2006-07 biennium is $49 billion. And I'll try to be clear that most of the time we'll be talking about general funds, but again, I will try to highlight for you and mention those particular areas where there's some relationship between the general fund and another fund. Looking at the chart on the top of page 4, this breaks down the spending changes by category and by bill area, which we typically do. And you'll see again that $1.6 billion broken down, 5.8% increase. And you'll see the changes in each of the areas. In K-12 education, it's a 1.5% increase over the current biennium. But again, here I would remind you that we actually had projected in the forecast a 1.5% decline here, and showing a $185 million drop. So you kind of add those together and get that $360 million that's really the increase over the forecast. Again, this reference point here is showing from the current biennium perspective. You'll see in higher education, there's from the current biennium, it's the increase is about 8.4%. And then in the property taxation credits, it's a 2.8% increase. There were some things that were scheduled to increase there in current law. I think in particular the county aid formula had a $100 million increase there. Health and Human Services. This is a place where I want to try to make sure that I'm clear about what's going on here.
Excuse me, before we get into that, Commissioner, Representative Dorman has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner, and maybe you can address it when you get down to public safety. But the governor just got a press release announcing a legislative initiative today on sex offenders. I'm just wondering if that's covered in that public safety dollar for where that $100 million is.
Commissioner?
But if it's out of order, you want to address it there, that's fine.
No, that's all right. I'll just say, Mr. Chairman and Representative Dorman, there are several places in the governor's budget recommendations that encompass the sex offender changes that he was announcing today. The biggest of them is in the sentencing area. And so he has recommendations for increases in for the courts and public defenders as a result of sentencing changes that are primarily the part of his package that he announced today. In addition, I think he's probably including things that are already included in his budget here in corrections, where there's a number of initiatives dealing with the increased inmate population, and between corrections and public safety, there's the sex offender, the predatory offender registry, and some of those initiatives. I think the biggest difference is that kind of nailing down of the sentencing part of the proposal, and there is funding included in his recommendations for the courts and public defenders.
Representative Gorman.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner, then the number of new beds that were in the release that was quoted at 850, that's not necessarily anything different than what was already there with the Faribault expansion, or is there something else that he's calling for?
Mr. Chair and Representative Dorman, I think that I guess I'm not exactly sure the numbers that he announced, but I think that he's looking at the increased number of inmates over the current biennium and counting both changes under the I'm not exactly sure. It could be that it's a longer term number in terms of the number of inmates, but I know that primarily from the sex offender initiatives, what we were mostly looking at in this 06-07 biennium is costs in the courts and public defenders, more costs and corrections in the 08-09 biennium, when the sentencing would really take effect and impact the inmate count there.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I was talking about the Health and Human Services, and you'll see that number shows a $600 plus million increase and a 9.1% over the current biennium. And now I had just talked to you on an earlier page about what was forecast was 20% growth in this area. And I just want to be clear that this isn't changed by 10% here or cut in half. But in fact, this is the effect in the general fund. But when you, in trying to understand the governor's proposal in the Health and Human Services area, it's really important to look at the combination of the general fund and the healthcare access fund. And if I could just maybe give you a couple of those numbers. When you look at the combined growth from biennium to biennium, combining the Health and Human Services programs in the general fund and the healthcare access fund, it was scheduled to be an 18% growth. And what actually is occurring under the governor's budget recommendations is a 15% growth. So a number of things, I'll talk a little bit more when we get in a little bit more detail on the Health and Human Services area, but basically the governor is recommending an enhanced general assistance medical care program, but that it be financed in the health care access fund and not in the general fund. So there's actually a large movement of costs in the general fund into another fund rather than actually being eliminated. It's more like that 3% of that what was projected growth, which would really be the difference in the whole health and human services area, including child care and the health care programs and other and net of some initiatives there as well. But in the general fund, you're seeing on this chart, the effect here is a 9.1% increase.
Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Singerson, 2 years ago, the governor took some excess money that was in the health care access fund, which is the sick tax, the 2%, that may have raised from 1.5% to 2%. But there was excess money. How much 2 years ago was transferred from the healthcare access fund into the general fund? Was it in the area of about $300 million?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair and Representative Solberg, there's a couple of things that were going on. And I think there was something like a little over $100 million, $114 million. From the healthcare access, from the general fund that didn't, it stayed in the general fund. It didn't transfer and come back. It just was, there was language that said that, let me see. Maybe I might need some help from one of these guys here.
Well, I can't understand that, but then there was, Mr. Chair, Ms. Thing, there was also an excess in the healthcare access fund that was a transfer to the general fund. I'm trying to find out what that
number was.
Commissioner.
What I've got here, Mr. Chairman and Representative Solberg, are the specific transfers. But what happened was 2 years ago the governor had recommended eliminating the health care access fund. That didn't pass in legislation, but some things were done to, in current law, what was expected at that time when the budget was set to be balances in the health care access fund that were scheduled to be transferred to the general fund. And those transfers was $238 million in fiscal 05 and $21 million in fiscal 04.
So, Mr. Chairman, we, in effect, we're approaching about $300 million from, you know, with the extra 114 and so forth, somewhat over that. Argue schematics. But my point is that the governor 2 years ago took money from the Health Care Access Fund and transferred to the general fund. This year, we're doing it just the opposite. We're taking programs that are general fund and putting it in the Health Care Access Fund. I'm just kind of curious, you know, it's a kind of a good way of reducing the cost, but you're not really reducing the cost. You're having those people that are supposed to have health care access that was set up by Governor Carlson, I think, for insurance. All of a sudden, that's coming into the responsibility of the general fund. So it's just an interesting schematic, that's all.
Mr. Showalter?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think your point is well taken that there are different ways of looking at these programs. I think one of the things that was present 2 years ago and is present yet today is trying to understand the programs and making sure that they work together. And that was a challenge then and still is a challenge now. In the case of GAMC in Minnesota Care, for instance, some of the surplus that we see in the November forecast is due to the interaction between those programs as well as medical assistance, where we start to look at changes in eligibility determination systems and suddenly costs move from the health care access fund into the general fund, leaving previously expected expenses unencumbered in the health care access fund.
Mr. Chairman, is this a fancy way of saying that the governor's policy caused part of that 20% increase in health care costs?
Mr. Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think the...
Or am I too blunt in saying that?
maybe not too blunt, just wrong.
Well, I don't think I am wrong.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just say the numbers... When we do the forecast, it's under current law. And so the current law required these transfers from the health care access fund to the general fund. And one of the things, as Mr. Showalter was describing, is that what we've got is we've got the Minnesota Care Program financed out of the health care access fund. We've got the medical assistance program and general assistance medical care financed out of the general fund. We primarily get federal money for the medical assistance program in the general fund. But a couple of years ago, because we expanded Minnesota Care, we sought a federal waiver to get some federal reimbursement under the Minnesota Care program. So because we were expanding coverage and covering more folks, we got approval to get federal reimbursement on some of the people in the Minnesota Care program. But one of the conditions of the federal waiver was that if people were in fact eligible for medical assistance or general assistance medical care, where there's no premium that has to be paid and the services are a little bit more expansive, we had to identify those people and move them into the program. And so, in fact, one of the things that we always estimated that maybe as many as a third of the people in the Minnesota Care program were actually eligible for our other state-funded programs. And so now what's happening is we're kind of providing this new system to streamline the application process so that as a person applies for Minnesota Care, we can tell them right away that, in fact, they are eligible and offer them a choice to move into the other program. Well, this new eligibility determination system that mainly comes about because the feds are requiring it under the waiver program, it's a system that has been in the works and under development for some time, but we're depending upon when that comes online and is available, we're making some different assumptions about how many people will be moving from Minnesota Care to the state programs. And so, in fact, that was a lot of the dynamic that occurred in the forecast in November, is that we assume that there's a lot more people that are in the Minnesota Care program that will be moving into the medical assistance and GAMC programs that are funded primarily under the general fund. In fact, you know, this is still an estimate of what will occur here, but that's one of the dynamics that has freed money up in the healthcare access fund and is increasing the cost in the general fund. And Mr. Chairman and Representative Solberg, I just want to be clear that that 19% growth that was forecast in the health and human services area was partly a result of this dynamic and interaction between those two funds, but there are some other things going on there too. There were a number of programs that were passed in the 2003 session that were temporarily capped, and then the cap goes off in the forecast in 2006-07. So that's another place where there's some growth that's occurring. I think some of the other specially waivered programs where caps on enrollment in those programs were in place for 2004-05, the caps go off in 2006-07 under the forecast under current law. Likewise, there was the maximum rates for child care reimbursement were in place only for 2004-05. And they jump up in 2006-07. So there's a lot of things that were going on inside the forecast that's responsible for that growth. And I think if you try to just look at the programs in the Healthcare Access Fund and the General Fund combined, you'll look at Health and Human Services programs growing 18% in the forecast and under the governor's recommendation, 15%.
To this point, Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe just that is I think, generally accurate description of an evolution. Actually, the evolution began more than 2 years ago because we've had 1115 waivers going further back, which meant that people on Minnesota Care were frequently, almost all the families, not the adults without children, but the families, we've been getting federal match. So it's kind of a quasi-medical assistance Minnesota Care. I'm not sure that I'm all enamored about the kind of the co-mix, but that's just the reality. The reality is that the kind of the sanctity of Minnesota Care as kind of a standalone, fed entirely by the Minnesota taxpayer, has been evaporating over the years. And it's harder and harder to distinguish between someone on Minnesota Care and someone on medical assistance. The move recently, because of the Health Match program, is now more of a rigid one, which says we're obliged because the Fed's telling us that if a person's eligible for medical assistance, then we have to tell them that. And by the way, from a consumer consideration of the consumer, it's better for them. I mean, they don't have any $10,000 hospitalization cap or anything. But what it means increasingly is that there are such incredibly blurred lines between Minnesota Care and the others. Frankly, I think the day has come when we should consider sort of getting rid of all these towers and blending our health care programs. But it does, Representative Solberg, get sort of complicated in terms of these transfers. We also had in 2003, 190-some million, I think, of federal money that was sort of a temporary assistance that partly got into this, so it's gone both ways. But the lines have been very much blurred. 2 years ago was the S-CHIP, which was kind of an enhanced match. So that even blurred even more. So the fact is, Minnesota Care, as you knew it in the mid-90s, is not the Minnesota Care of 2005.
Representative Huntley.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, it's quite clear that the governor in his own language considers Minnesota Care now a welfare program. And in fact, he considers all health care for low-income people welfare. Some of us just think that that's what society ought to do is help these people. And Minnesota Care used to be a program aimed at working folks that didn't get health care with their job. And while Representative Bradley is correct, some of those people were and are eligible for medical assistance. Basically, what we're really talking about there is mainly the families with kids. What this proposal doesn't take care of is a whole bunch of folks that were on Minnesota Care that don't have kids. And all of them were working people. And what this proposal and then last year's proposal does is basically eliminate that group of people from any kind of, even though they're working. And if Commissioner Ingerson could tell me if what this proposal is going to do to Sheila Hart, who needs chemotherapy to stay alive, and what's it going to do to Kathy Kirstering, who called me on Friday. She lives in Duluth, a home health care aide, and she had a pancreatic transplant about 3 weeks ago, which seems to be working fine, but it cost her $3,000 a month in anti-rejection drugs to keep that pancreas working. And now she's told that she's getting kicked off of Minnesota Care. Is there anything in this budget, Commissioner, that will take care of those two women?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Huntley, in fact, the General Assistance Medical Care Program under the governor's proposal has been enhanced somewhat to allow for a reinstatement of the spend down. So, in fact, the currently single adults without children at up to 175% of the federal poverty guideline are in the Minnesota Care program, and that's been eliminated, but the General Assistance Medical Care program, where eligibility is for 75% of the federal poverty guideline, has been, the spend down has been reinstated so that, in fact, people who do have extraordinary health expenses can spend down a portion of their income to become eligible for General Assistance Medical Care.
Well, Mr.
Representative Hartley
and Commissioner Kathy Kirstering, if she's able to go back to work, would have to spend down $550, is my understanding. So if you pay the out of that $3,000, she doesn't make $3,000 a month. And she'd have to live on $550 a month, and her home mortgage is about $500. So I'd like to know how she's going to live on $50.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, actually, Representative Huntley made one of my comments as it relates to the working individuals that are no longer going to be eligible for Minnesota Care, but I have another point, and I don't believe you have the information, and I realize that we're going to be getting an overview in health policy and finance, and so maybe it is for them to make sure that they have it. The individuals that you stated as it relates to that currently are eligible for one of the other programs, I'm interested in knowing some information about them. Have they always been eligible, or is it because they're like some of my constituents that used to be working, they're now either unemployed, working temporary jobs, or making $10,000 to $20,000 or more less, and so now they would qualify for one of the other state programs. I'm going to know about these individuals instead of just saying that they're a black group of individuals that currently can be shifted to a different program.
Commissioner Ingerson or Mr. Showalter?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think we should probably follow up with the Department of Human Services to help work through the eligibility determination process. We're not, I think.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can do that, but I think it's just important to know, since we are talking about this group of individuals, that the odds are, you know, there's going to be a percentage that was always eligible that, because of our bureaucracies, that we didn't know that they qualified. But I'm pretty sure a chunk of these individuals would not have qualified a year, 2 years, or 3 years ago. But because of the employment situations that not only in South Minneapolis but throughout the state, individuals are struggling to maintain, not only paying for their health care benefits, but just being able to survive. And so just to talk about them as this black lack of individuals that is so great that we found this other program. I think it is important as legislators to also look at the fact that these are individuals that used to be able to invest more in our overall economy, but because of the current situations that they have as individuals, aren't.
Representative Bradley.
Mr. Chair, could I just maybe respond?
Oh, sure. Commissioner, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Representative Walker. I think that I realized after you talked the second time that you were talking about the people that under our forecast shifted from the Minnesota Care Program.
No.
To the Medical Assistance Program?
No.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, just...
Sure, Representative Walker.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. It's that group, that piece of it, but it's a larger group because you talked about individuals, not just in the forecast, but in previous years and what is yet to be determined by who gets signed up today. And so it's more than just that forecasted number of group of folks.
Okay.
Okay, Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We'll have lots more time to discuss this, but let's at least remind ourselves of the situation that's before us. This data was shown to us, and that is that you can't sustain 18 or 19% no matter what you do, really. We have to do something to bring these exploding costs to bear, or we'll be sitting here complaining about not enough money for education, for all the other priorities. So it's fine to speak about reductions, changes that may have an effect, and I don't deny that. I mean, that's reality, I understand. But I think we also have to keep sort of a fiscal responsibility picture in front of us, and what's the alternative. I would also point out, by the way, that even after this is done, and we'll be able to show you the numbers, that Minnesota is still the most generous state in any of our surrounding region at all, and even on a national comparison. And let me also react to the mention of Ms. Shira Hart, and her case is a tragic case. I think the other case I've mentioned is tragic as well. However, Ms. Hart does have an alternative, and it's been exercised. There are, and we have made sure, my own staff is the one that brought it to her attention, prescription drug assistance programs that pharmaceuticals offer. They go typically up to 200% of poverty. It has worked marvelously for her. I'm really ashamed sometimes that it's been politicized repeatedly, when in fact she's been taken care of. And her case, and we know that the drug company has done it. Sometimes when people are in need, we ought to focus on helping the person rather than sort of turning it into some sort of a horrific story that really has no merit, because her situation, thankfully, was resolved. As I don't know about the other case that was mentioned, but at least it's a potential. There are other forms of helping people available, too.
And Commissioner, just to be clear on the big picture then, I mean, we heard 19.9% in terms of projected general fund increases. Is it my understanding that the biennial to biennial increase in all Health and Human Services spending under current law is about 18%? Is that the number?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. And the governor's budget, I think, moves that to 15%. Is that right?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. I've got Representatives Rukavina, Greiling, and Huntley. Representative Rukavina.
Well, first of all, Mr. Chair and Representative Bradley, if Ms. Hart is out of the woods, maybe you and I should leave here right now and tell her that, because as of yesterday or a day before, I got an email from her that I think a number of you did, and she doesn't know that yet.
She does.
Well, I don't believe so. And the fact of the matter is, as Representative Huntley pointed out, basically what we have going on here is taking people off of Minnesota Care. Now, Ms. Angerson, I wish that someone else would come and present this budget to us, because you're way too nice a lady to pick on, and I know your true philosophical feelings, and you probably didn't have much to do with this budget. But I wish I'd get people that were engineers of the mess we're in, including Mr. McElroy, who, you know, helped engineer this mess along with the governor, current governor, Mr. Bradley, Representative Bradley. You know, I do have a somewhat historical perspective of this place, and I can tell you that the mess we're in is not because of anything but what the philosophy has been in the House of Representatives since you took over.
Representative Brookerman, do you have a question?
I do have a question, but it has to go with this. I want to know exactly how many people you've estimated are going to be cut off of Minnesota Care in actual numbers, number one. And number two, did Representative Solberg get to the heart of the question when he asked you about shifting health care access fund dollars in 2004 and 2005, but isn't it it's going beyond that in 06 and 07, and didn't it actually start prior to that? Weren't there shifts earlier than the 04, 21 million in 04, or am I mistaken on that?
Commissioner Anderson.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Rukavina, to your last question, I'm not sure because the information I have about the Health Care Access Fund just in front of me here goes to 04, so I'm not sure if there were transfers prior to fiscal 04. But if I could, on the point about eligibility, Mr. Chair and Representative Rukavina, in the overall governor's budget recommendations, there was in this Health and Human Services area, combined general fund and health care access fund, growth projected of $1.4 billion. Under the governor's recommendations, it's $1.14 billion. And that's in all of Health and Human Services. And so there are a number of changes in other areas like child care. I will tell you that the actual cost, the savings from the eligibility changes alone is $80 million. And there are other things, but that's the cost of the changes in eligibility. That's the savings forecast. And in fact, under the forecast, under current law, healthcare programs would be expanded to 54,000 people, additional people, over what they are in this current biennium. And under the governor's recommendation, it's about cut in half. So there still is about 27,000 new people that will receive coverage from the numbers today that are covered.
But Mr. Chairman,
so go ahead, Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Anderson, you know that they have to spend down, and Representative Huntley pointed out a lot of them are going to spend down in poverty and not be able to make other financial obligations that they may have. And the fact of the matter is that, and I believe that this has been mentioned by Representative Huntley and others, these people are dropping off of Minnesota Care. Aren't going to not get sick just because they aren't on Minnesota Care. Members, we're going to end up paying the bill. It may be at Hennepin County Hospital or the Virginia Regional Medical Center and other publicly owned facilities and even privately owned facilities that are going to pay the bill on this. But these people aren't going to go away. And Representative Bradley, the mid-1990s isn't that far back in history. And the Health Care Access Fund and the sick tax was supported by overwhelming majorities of Minnesotans who said that people that show up every day, that go to work, working poor, deserve to have coverage. And that's not that old of a philosophy in this. You know, the historical perspective is still there on this. What we're doing with the Minnesota Access Health Care Access Fund, to me, correlation can be drawn to Social Security on the federal level. You've spent all the excess money, and the same they're doing on the federal level with Social Security. You use the money for programs it wasn't meant for, and then when there's no money left, you say, oh boy, look, this program isn't working anymore. There's no money, because you've stolen all the money.
Okay. Members, I've got four people that want to speak, I think, probably to this issue, and I'm wondering if we should try to move on and get through the rest of the presentation, and then if we've got time, go back to the Health and Human Services issue. I am, as I announced earlier, going to be having one hearing at least where we do nothing but health care. I think it's a very important topic that we've got to spend some time on, but I also want to be sensitive to other subjects and the rest of this budget presentation. Members, I've got Representatives Greiling, Huntley, Doran, Otremba. Do you feel like you could wait a little bit later for your question? Okay, I see nods on that. Representative Huntley, you've had a few cracks already. Do you have to have something right now again?
Well, Mr. Chair, this is the Budget Committee. And if we fix the state budget so it looks good, but we don't worry about what other impacts that has around the state, then I don't think we're doing a good job of fixing the budget.
And Representative Huntley, we are definitely interested in impacts around the state, and we're definitely going to be spending a lot of time on this issue.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if you lived in Hennepin County, you'd really be concerned, because last year their hospital lost $30 million, and with what we may do this year, that's probably going to be $40 million or $50
million.
And
okay.
The taxpayers of Hennepin County pay for it.
Okay, well, we're going to thank you for your comment. Thank you, Representatives Greiling, Dorn, and Okremba, for holding off for a little bit here, and we'll try to get back to you later today. I just want to give a chance for the rest of the forecast and the, or rather the budget to be presented, and questions that people may have on other subjects to be able to be brought up too.
Well,
Commissioner Ingerson.
Mr. Chairman, I have another question. I think it's kind of in this part that we're talking about. It has nothing to do with health care.
All right, Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Have you said what the projected state revenue increase in the general fund is in dollar amounts and as a percentage between the last budgeting period and the projected for this? Is that, am I missing that somewhere here? I'd like to know what that is.
Commissioner Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart, if you look on the chart on the top of page 2, this was the forecast growth in revenue. This shows like total revenues growing 2.8%, and in fact taxes at 7.9%. In fact, even underlying that, income tax is growing 13.5%. And these are the numbers that were forecast.
So,
Representative Hart,
Chairman and Commissioner, we're looking at a growth of $805 million. Projected at, and that's a percent change of 2.8. Am I understanding that correctly?
Commissioner Ingerson.
Yes.
We have other figures that seem to, general fund spending at $1.6 billion and 5.8% and some other something else in here. That's why I was trying to figure out which ones that you were talking about. But I'll accept that. That's what we're talking about here. Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Ingerson.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'd move to the chart on the bottom of page 4 that shows the general fund spending under the governor's recommendation of $29.7 billion and how it breaks out. As you can see, E-12 education continues to be the largest portion of the budget there. Looking at the chart on the top of page 5, shows that the governor's plan maintains the cash flow and budget reserves. And in fact, the way we measure a combined the cash flow account at $350 million, the budget reserve at $653, and we measure the combined cash flow and budget reserves at 4.3% of fiscal 2007 spending, with our longer-term goal to get to 5% of spending. When you look at the chart on the bottom of page 5...
Oops, before we go to the next chart, sorry, Representative Abler, I see you've got a question.
No, I was just going to be on the list at the end of the next break. It's about...
Oh, all right. Okay, we'll put you on the deferred question list. Okay. All right. Appreciate your patience, too. Commissioners, well, just let me ask you a question, then. If you're saying that you want to get to 5%, then, you know, that's another 0.7%, whatever that is. At some future budget, ideally, the governor would prefer to increase the budget reserve, then, or the cash flow account?
Mr. Chairman, we're probably looking at increasing the budget reserve, and what we just look at is this measure of and shoot for something in the neighborhood of 5% of spending. And, you know, when we combine the cash flow account and the budget reserve and look at, under the governor's proposal, fiscal 2007 spending, it's 4.3%. So if we were looking at some point in the future to increase that, it would probably be in the budget reserve.
Okay. All right, go ahead.
And the chart on the bottom of page 5 shows the effect of the governor's budget recommendations in each, this 06, 07, where his recommendations are for, and then what we call the planning estimates going forward in 08, 09, and tracks the effects of the governor's recommendations on revenue and spending, and you can see there's a positive balance there. Left on the bottom with excess revenues over spending.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Solberg.
Very quick question. Can you share with us at some time the projected real economic growth that gives us those figures?
Is
that 4.8% going out into the next? Can you just, you don't have to have them today, and I don't expect you to have them, but can you share with us at some point what the assumptions of the economic growth is based on those to get those?
Oh, okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, I think what you're talking about is the growth, economic GDP growth projections for 08 and 09.
Yeah, would you just share that with
us? Yes.
Representative Silver, I know it's not 4.8%. It's something in the 3% range, but I don't remember the exact ones.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Riccovina, to that point.
Ms. Angerson, I'm going over the graph on the bottom of page 5, and you're saying that we will be structurally balanced now out to 09, but yet, how do you explain that, that was also projected for 03, 04, and 05, and we didn't meet that goal, and we had to take a lot of cuts and one-time dollars to balance the budget.
Commissioner Angerson.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Riccovina, you're talking about probably when we set the budget in, if you mentioned 03, back in the 2003 legislative session, when we set the budget for 04, 05, or going back further.
Well, actually, I was talking about 02 even, when we theoretically balanced the budget for 03.
Yes. Mr. Chair and Representative Riccovina, when we look at the effects of the governor's budget recommendations in the next biennium, it's under the set of assumptions that we have in front of us now, and it's appropriate to note that we are making assumptions about the growth in the economy, that if something doesn't pan out, that there will be differences and things can go out of balance, and that's the risk that is inherent here, and one of the things that we're attempting to manage for now, building in these large balances. It's certainly no guarantee that we would be balanced in 08, 09, but under the set of assumptions that we're making now about economic growth, it would be. But as you point out, Representative Riccovina, we've thought that we've been balanced in the past and find that we're not in balance, and therein lies some of the risk in the forecast. We're making assumptions about economic growth and, you know, why we think it's appropriate to have reserves to manage for those changes in assumptions.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative
Riccovina, you know, this is my 19th year in the legislature, and very few times have we been off in making those assumptions, and you've been around all of those years, Ms. Angerson. Very few times were we off at all, much less off to the degree we've been off in the last 3 years. So what, Ms. Angerson, you've worked on finance here for, God, much longer than I've been around even. You look so young, though. But anyway, you know, tell me what's going on that we're so far off the last 3 years.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Riccovina, I think the recession that began in February of 2001 was actually at the time that the recession began. We didn't know it was a recession until the following fall, and it was clearly called by the Bureau of Economic Analysis after it was over. So we had some signs in 2001 that revenues were kind of falling off, but no one expected the job loss that would occur and the lack of job growth. I think we had faced recessions in the early 80s and the early 90s, and after each of those recessions, within 12 months, we saw job numbers come back up. That hasn't occurred. We still, if we think about February of 2001 as the peak of job growth, we're still not back to those same numbers. And this will be almost 4 years of lost job growth. And in the 90s, we were adding jobs to the economy in Minnesota, 40,000 jobs a year on average. And so we've lost 4 years of job growth. And I think that the changes that have occurred in the economy over the last few years are things that were difficult for people to predict. We kept expecting that the job growth would come back up, and it still hasn't. There's really, I think, been a whole restructuring of the economy that's occurred in the last few years.
So, Mr. Chair, in ending,
okay, finishing up, Representative Rooker,
there was one person, not everyone agreed, and there was one person that year, 2001, that took this legislative session to the June 30th, and that was your former boss, Senator Moll, who said that budget that year couldn't be sustained by counting on job growth because of the recession we were in at the time. So there was not everyone was in agreement. But Mr. Chair, as my friends next to me pointed out, if we look at the pessimistic view of the future and economic growth, this is the optimistic view we're seeing here.
Commissioner?
No, Mr. Chairman and Representative Rukavina, what we look at as we look at it, include in our forecast of economic growth, we look at what comes from Global Insights, our economic forecaster, is what is called the control forecast. And it has a 60% probability. There is both an optimistic and a pessimistic assigned on either end of that, assigned a 20% probability. So there is a more optimistic forecast and a more pessimistic one. This is the control forecast.
Representative Dorman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm from the fracas category and non-fracas category, and we should signal differently to get on the list or what. But
are you in the health and human category or the non-health and human category? All right, then you're up to bat. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner. I'm looking at these numbers in the out years, 08 and 09. We always hear so darn much about what the bond houses think about this and that. And if I understand those numbers in 08 and 09, they would include revenue inflation, but not spending inflation. And then help me understand how K-12 funding is looked at in years 8 and 9. And then did the bond council, did they say anything about that? Or don't they really look at that 08-09 figure when they review us later?
Commissioner Ingeson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dorman, it is a very important measure that the rating agencies look at, that relationship between revenues and spending in the following biennium. It's one of the reasons why the state has had a AAA rating from some of the rating agencies, because not all states look at the long-term impact. So, in fact, it's an important measure, and as you point out, Representative Dorman, there is growth assumed, inflated growth assumed on the revenue side, not on the spending side. The spending is flat except for adjustments in caseload and enrollment. The K-12 assumptions that you asked about, the per-student formula would be the same in 08 and 09 as it is in 07, but adjusted for the number of students enrolled. So those spending numbers in 08, 09 do not include the effect of inflation. But the balances that are left on the bottom is close to the equivalent of what would be inflation.
And Commissioner, I guess following up a little bit with what Representative Dorman asked, since we're talking about bond houses and bonding, this is a question I was going to ask. You've got an 06-07 budget now for debt service with the governor's budget. We know what the governor's proposed budget is for bonding for this year. What is built into that in terms of a bonding bill for next year?
Mr. Chairman, the assumption that we make in the forecast is that we use a 10-year, a rolling 10-year average of the past, both an even and an odd number. And so I think that the even-numbered legislative sessions, we're looking at about a $400 million bonding bill, and for the odd-numbered sessions, about $100 million.
Okay, so despite the fact that we'll almost certainly have a bonding bill way in excess of $100 million this year, you're still expecting that the rolling 10-year average number, $400, $500 million, something like that, will be the number of the bonding bill that the governor is forecasting for next year. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, yes.
Okay. Representative Dorn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Follow-up on the answer in terms of, as I understood you, in 08 and 09, you are adjusting the K-12 enrollment, or those adjustments are in these calculations?
Mr. Chairman, yes, it's adjusted for enrollment, but it's at the per student formula amount, the same as it is, as the per student amount is in 07. And so there's no increase projected in the amount of the formula, but the number of students are adjusted.
And Mr. Chairman, Ms. Ingerson, is that an anticipated decline in enrollment for K-12?
Mr. Chairman, yes.
And Mr. Chairman, what calculations are in these numbers for higher ed enrollment? Are they adjusted in these calculations?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that there is not a change in enrollment in higher ed adjustments in 08-09.
And Commissioner, that's because the governor has proposed to make a change in that, is that right?
Well, Mr. Chairman, not necessarily. Actually, what happens is we look at the enrollment in the forecast before the budget is set. So we haven't made estimates of enrollment because of this two-year lag in student enrollment. So we wouldn't be looking at making the adjustments in higher ed enrollment for 08-09 until the November forecast.
Yes.
Before the 08-09 biennium.
Okay. All right, please proceed.
Okay. Mr. Chairman and members, looking on to page 6, this is just really kind of high-level highlights on some of the particular things in the governor's recommendations. As you can see in K-12 education, and probably know, the governor is recommending an increase of 2% per year on the per-student formula, and along with some levy proposals, this provides for an increase in revenue per student of 5.3% by fiscal year 07, or up to 8% if a district uses the what's noted here, the teacher performance pay proposal that the governor has. And the funding in there is about $60 million, and that's enough funding for about half of the students in the K-12 system. Again, there's a couple of things that are other initiatives. The 11th and 12th grade program called Get Ready, Get Credit, allowing students more opportunities to get college credit for courses that they take in high school.
Okay, Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Ms. Ingerson. You know, one of the second bullet down here says makes school funding more transparent. And I know that was a recommendation from the Education Finance Task Force, but I'm having trouble figuring out how this budget for education is more transparent. First of all, at the briefing that we had last week, even you didn't seem to understand all the nuances of it. I asked about the pupil weighting that every lobbyist that has anything to do with education was concerned about last week, and you nor Commissioner McElroy nor another staff person who went back to check with somebody who might know about the education finance formula seem to know if there were any changes to the pupil weighting or not. So I would submit that this isn't a very transparent budget. If even good people like you all, who seem to be quite informed, couldn't know about that in order to answer my question. I did, however, go with Representative Dorn and ask Chaz Anderson right after that, and she knew all about it. So that, you know, makes me wonder, considering how informed you all are, if I got a straight answer when I asked my question at the briefing. And that concerns me, because all of us here, our word is our bond in this place. We all expect to be given level answers that we may or may not agree with, but we at least expect to be shared information with. And I just have to question that none of you knew about that pupil weighting change when I asked about it. But I'll just go on from there.
Mr. Chair?
Just first on that, Commissioner, you want to respond and tell us what the pupil weighting change is?
Mr. Chair, Representative Grotling, I was thinking about the first part of your comments, but it sounded to me like the later portion of your comments were assuming that we were somehow misleading you. And I don't pretend, Representative Grotling, to know everything about the education funding formula. And it is, in fact, that I would expect people from the Department of Education to know about it. And I guess I'm really concerned about your comments because I think they that you're suggesting that I intentionally, not knowing the answer to the question that you raised and not wanting to give an incorrect answer, that you're suggesting I was misleading you.
Representative Grotling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Ingerson, I'm very concerned with something major. That it is a huge change that the whole education finance community was very upset about, that no one at the briefing would know something as important as that in the education finance formula. We are told that there another thing that's right here on this page that we also have heard is that there's a 5.3% increase for schools. And here I did hear you say, Commissioner, or Ms. Ingerson, that that it also is increased, it's taking into account the levies that are that school districts may or may not wage against their property taxpayers. But to say that, you know, it's that kind of an increase right here automatically, I think, is misleading all of us, including the public. And then an 8% increase if they choose to take part in the teacher compensation, we know that that's an opportunity that is not available for every school student, that only half at the best would be able to participate in that, and so forth. So I am concerned, and maybe Ms. Ingerson, you might not know, but I would think Commissioner McElroy would know, or the person who went back into the bowels of the staff offices in the governor's office and came back and still couldn't answer my question. It seems to me that somebody there, if we're going to get straight answers at press conferences, ought to have been able to get that information. I know we can't all know about every single budget, so I don't know if you personally knew, but I think somebody ought to have been able to get an answer to that, which I think was a very important question. It mattered to a lot of people, and it concerns me that I couldn't get an answer even when people checked back with others. So that is my concern. Whether you knew or not, I think somebody should have known. That's where my concern lies. But my main concern with the education budget is that, like that answer at the press conference, this budget is a lot of smoke and mirrors. When you peel it back, even though you said, Ms. Ingerson, over there on page 2 that there's a forecasted 1.5% lack of growth, and then when we get over to page 4, there's a 1.5% increase. And you could add it together and get $360 million more for education. But I don't think that's how the schools are going to interpret it. I think they're only going to count, and in fact, that's what our fiscal staff does count, and what I count is that 1.5% increase. The rest of that is all property taxes. And I've checked with constituents at a town meeting and asked, would you rather have property taxes and fees increased, given that the businesses, commercial, industrial, and the cabins aren't in some of those formulas anymore, so it will fall onto homeowners? Or would you rather have the state do our duty, as we promised in the 2001 property tax reform, and have it be statewide taxes? And almost the whole room asked for that. They don't want the property tax increase. So that's my biggest concern about this education budget. And then, Mr. Chair, if you would indulge me one more small comment.
I don't know if I will, Representative Grotling. Do you have a question for the commissioner?
Okay, Mr. Chair, if you'd like a question. My question then...
Well, I thought that's what we were doing here. We're presenting the governor's budget and we're taking questions, aren't we?
Well, I heard a lot of other comments on a lot of other topics, so...
Okay.
So I'm making mine.
All right, well, if you could, I want to make sure everyone's got a chance to ask any questions they may have. We've still got a ways to go on the presentation, and so if you have a question, please ask one.
So now I'm ready for my question. And my question is, how much money here, if we don't count property taxes and we don't count the shortfall that was in there, the 1.5% shortfall, how much new money is there that would be there for all students, and what percent would you count that? Would you count that as 1.5%, or do you have some other way that I can't figure out to call it 3% or something else?
Okay, Commissioner, that was a very long statement and question. I know there, you may want to, I'll let you respond however you want, to the first part as well as the ending question.
Mr. Chair, I am really concerned about the comments that Representative Greiling made, and I, in the interest of time, I will talk to her about that after the meeting, but it's not my intention to mislead anyone about the numbers, and I think that we've been trying to be clear. The revenue per student numbers that we're showing here at 5.3% is the way we've always talked about education funding, Representative Greiling, and counted the state dollars as well as property tax dollars in revenue per student. And it's a 1.5% increase over the current funding, but there are fewer students. So there's more money per student than in the current year. And that's the 5.3% that you get to by the end of the 2007. There are three provisions for levies in this proposal, and there's a number of current levies that are special levies in particular areas that are combined, and districts are allowed to, and increase. And so the districts are allowed to do this on a referendum basis. There are two other provisions that it's with school board approval with a reverse referendum. So that if taxpayers are and that is for special education, and another one for deferred maintenance. I mean, all of these are things that we had heard from school districts that they had concerns about. We've heard from school districts that they're interested in raising levies in some cases. I guess I don't know what else to say of how to describe this. The 5.3 is the way we've historically described this. And, you know, like I say, Mr. Chair, my other comments with Representative Greiling, I'll talk about outside the meeting.
I've got Representative Abler and Carlson. Representative Rukavina, to that point.
Just to that point quickly, Ms. Angerson, one historical, if this is the way we've always historically done it, I don't remember ever counting an X a levy maybe being passed in a school district in the state budget. Okay. Can you tell me when we did this historically?
Representative Rukavina, we talk about revenues per student, and we're making some assumptions about, and as we always do, make assumptions about where levies will be increased, and we're assuming that some of them won't be.
Well, Mr. Chair, but you're giving the impression to this committee right now that we've always historically done this, so I'll just throw something out. If you're saying you're making assumptions, have you looked back at all the excess levies that failed? That first year, about 3 years ago, I think it was about 70% of them. So are you making the assumption that you're giving them the authority to do this, but 70% of them are going to fail?
Mr. Chair and Representative Rukavina, I'm not sure what the percentages are, but the Department of Education is estimating that some of those levies won't pass. They're making assumptions about what they know, estimates based on past experience, and that some of them aren't going to pass. And also included, most of these levies, if not all of them, are equalized. So it takes into account that property wealthy districts will likely pass referendums, but there are increases then that are provided to all districts.
Representative Dorman, to this point?
To that point. I haven't been around for as long as some folks, but this is similar to an amendment that Representative Greiling and I had last year. We
wanted to try to put a little money on the formula, and we put a little money on the formula, and we thought we were onto something with this levy, letting the school district levy. And so we put asked the Department of Revenue, and they said, jeepers, we think they'll all do that because they need the money. And so they came back with a revenue note saying, boy, they'll all do it, and they made that assumption. And that actually, because of the crazy way we do our accounting, that freed up cash. But I think they've made those assumptions for a while. But last year it was a little bit different, because last year letting those local units of government, we couldn't do that last year because that was a tax increase. I think the only thing that's changed is what the definition of a tax increase is. Last year that was a tax increase. This year it's not. It's local control.
Representative Abler.
Thank you. It's fun being here, Mr. This is a great committee to be on. I'm kind of glad I'm here. I thought we were talking about budgets, and here we get to just talk about whatever's on our mind. So I'm going to just stick to a number question, but I'll save my other thoughts for later when the part two comes. I have a number of concerns about this whole department as well, but I will save those thoughts for the committee where we talk about that.
We appreciate you keeping to the numbers, Representative Abler.
And so maybe they could, and maybe the question has been alluded to, but I'm curious, like on the Western Suburbs referendum cap is going to be increased, et cetera, and I'm sure there's some provision for how much you think that's going to cost, because every dollar costs something in the state, if it's 3 cents or a nickel or something. And maybe you don't have it today, but if that can be provided to us, I would like to know what the assumptions were. How many districts I think are actually going to vote by a school board action to raise their own levies, which in Oka actually might not, because they're fearful of building up the levies too heavy, because they might not pass their main levy in a couple of years from now. But those assumptions would help me to just understand this better. So thank you.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Abler, I don't have that information here, but I'll see about getting it from the Department of Education.
Thank you, Commissioner. I've got Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, clearly this is a budget that's being balanced on the backs of homeowners. You know, we can debate what we call a tax increase, state versus local, but clearly it's a tax increase, and that's where it's focused. But what I would like to know is how much. Now, when we're on the K-12, you indicated 5.3% increase. So I'll try to stay with the numbers. I want to learn more about how much this tax increase is. So the 5.3% tax increase on homeowners represents what across the state? Then the other question I have is, if we look at the entire state budget, that 5.3% is K-12. So what is it when we take all the other components of the state budget, when we start talking about that tax increase, how much are we going to put against the homeowner if we take in local governments, cities, counties, school districts, anything that I might be missing?
Well, I'm not sure that the 5.3% she's talking about is a property tax increase, Representative Carlson.
No, I'm talking about what part of that 5.3% falls on the property tax owner, if I wasn't clear on that. My understanding is that a big percentage of that 5.3% increase is a property tax increase. And secondly, I'm asking how many other property tax increases are in the governor's budget, because we're really talking about a tax increase here today.
Commissioner or Mr. Showalter?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Carlson, on the potential levy increases in the governor's budget recommendations for education, it would be $148 million. That's about 9.2% of the current law school levy. That's assuming all of the levies were increased. And it also, Mr. Chair, the 5.3% is the total revenue per student, counting the state aid, the equalized aid, and some portion of the assumptions on the levies.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I recognize that, but I wanted to know what the property tax implication was. It's $148 million.
And that's
across
in
the state
fiscal 07.
And that's for 07, okay. And what is 08?
Fiscal 08 is 12.6%.
Ooh. What's the dollar?
12.6% of the school portion.
Of the school portion of the levy, $215
million. Ooh. So for the biennium, then, we would have to add the $148 and the $215 to get the biennial property tax increase for schools. Is that what you're saying, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, this is the only 1 year's worth of this would come into the biennium, the 06-07 biennium. So the first number I gave you is for fiscal 07 or payable 06.
But
Mr. Chair, and just members, just to make sure that this is clear, we're talking about these percents as a portion of the school levy, which is about 25% of total levies. So this is a percent increase on a quarter of the total levies.
So, Mr. Chairman, it would be fair to say then we have a $148 million increase across the state, and then the tail. We used to talk about tails in this committee quite a bit into the next.
I'm sure we still will.
I'm sure we will, Mr. Chairman, is $215 million. So going back to my original premise, we have a major property tax increase here and therefore a tax increase in this bill. But, Mr. Chairman, I did have another part of that original question, and that was what other property tax implications there are in the bill beyond just K-12 education.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Carlson, I'm not aware of other places where there are property tax implications, and I guess I would be clear, I'd like to be clear when you talk about a major property tax increase. This comes to about 2.3% of total property taxes.
And Commissioner, when you're talking about the $148 million, is that all property taxes?
No.
Or is that is part of that equalized?
Mr. Chair, that's the property tax implications of the levies under the governor's recommendation, assuming that they are all increased, and that is of total school levies, which are about a quarter of total levies.
Right. Okay.
Well, Mr.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, you know, there, for example, when I mentioned the cities and counties, and we're talking earlier in the meeting about projections, you know, there are health care cuts in this bill, and I assume that the counties are going to need to make up some of those health care cuts then off the property tax. So I would hope that the Department of Finance has made projections in terms of what the impact of other changes in this budget are going to mean to the property tax. And if you haven't, you should be. So I'd like an answer to that question. If you've looked at these other areas, for example, health care, and we could come up with a long list, but I don't want to delay the committee. I'm just trying to get a handle on what the total bottom line property tax increases are going to be across the state of Minnesota.
Commissioner, or Mr. Showalter, what do you want to get back to us on that?
Mr. Chair, I think we probably try to get back to you on that, but I'm not sure that we're making assumptions about property tax increases outside of the education area.
Okay, just a second. Okay, so I've got Representative Clark next. Representative Carlson, do you have a follow-up?
Well, just only that we had a discussion earlier in the meeting. They are making assumptions relative to K-12 and other parts of the budget, so we apparently are picking and choosing them there where we make assumptions about what's going to happen. But I'll stop here.
Okay. Representative Rookavina, I want to be respectful of everyone who's got questions. I want to get back to those people that have been put on the waiting list, too, but go ahead.
Ms. Angerson, you just told me a little while ago that you're assuming that not all of these are going to pass because the Department of Education said they're not all going to pass, and they're using a formula that bases your assumption. And now you just told Representative Carlson that you're assuming $148 million is going to be raised because they're all going to, that's assuming every school district passes it.
Commissioner. Representative Rukavina, on the reverse referendum levies, there's an assumption that 95% of them will pass. The ones where the board acts and there's an allowance for a reverse referendum.
Okay. Representative Clark and then Larson.
Just a quick question, or actually maybe it's a bit of a response to Representative Carlson's question about other tax increases. It seems like renters are going to have a big tax increase. I understand it. The proposal here is to cut the renter's credit. And there's no, as we know, there's no provision in law that any sort of tax reduction to a property owner gets passed on to a renter. Never has there. You know, that just isn't there. And so my understanding is that that's worth about $30 million in increased property taxes to renters. Is that right?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, what the governor has a proposal that reduces the portion of the rent credit, the property tax, assuming that currently there's the assumption that 19% of what a renter pays in rent is related to property taxes. In fact, the Department of Revenue has a study that shows it's less than 15%. So the governor is recommending that that 19% go first to 16% and then to 15% to phase it in. But the fact of the matter is it's a tax credit currently that exceeds the tax paid. So people are getting credit more than what they pay in.
Representative Clark, follow-up.
Well, Mr. Chairman, there is nothing that directly says that the tax that the renter pays has any relationship to the actual tax of the property owner. I think we know that. If we were acting on that, we would have made sure that property owners passed on any savings, you know, to the renter. So I just want to know if my number is right. Is $30 million the increased
Mr. Chairman, the number is $30 million, but it's a credit that currently exceeds the tax.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think we can argue about that because it's not written that way. I just wanted to ask one very simple question. What is the governor's rationale for cutting all the youth programs?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, you say all of the youth programs.
Just
I
say,
think there are some in the Department of Employment and Economic Development that as they looked broadly at the priority setting process, determined that real job development programs and employment and training programs were the higher priority. And so he's recommended that I think it's the one youth program that has still a substantial funding from in federal funds still available and eliminated the state support for that program and then a couple of other youth employment programs.
Mr. Chairman, maybe you
could... Representative Clark, last question.
I just would like to know what the rationale is for cutting these youth job training programs. They have such a good track record in terms of getting youth into jobs, and I can't understand the rationale. It just seems mean. These are... I guess I'd like to know more than, you know, that's going to save some money to the state budget, because it's not going to really save money. These kids, if they don't have these after-school programs and they don't have these job training programs, they don't have the opportunities. It's mostly poor kids all over the state, though. It's statewide programs. So I just would like more of a rationale. Maybe we can get that another time.
Okay. Representative Larson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Commissioner Ingeson. It's just a clarification question. You had mentioned, I think, a $215 million revenue amount from the levies in 08. Was that for the 08-09 biennium, or was that a fiscal year 08? And if it's a fiscal year, what is it for 09?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Larson, it's in fiscal year 08 or pay 07, it's $215 million. In fiscal 09, pay 08, it's $230 million.
Okay, Commissioner, I've got the board cleared for the minute, I think, for you to continue. Let's try to get through this, the rest of the presentation.
Well, Mr. Chair, maybe I'll see what if we can get to the higher education chart.
All right.
And, in fact, this is a place where the governor has recommended a fairly significant increase in funding. Overall, for the University of Minnesota, it's about a 10.3% increase or $113 million. In fact, in this area, the recommendations are targeted to a number of things that were part of the university's request, biosciences, competitive compensation, research and support. For the MNSCU system, the governor's recommendation is $107.5 million increase, and that's about 8.5%. Again, there's a couple of things tied to the request for the
from the Minsky system that the governor is targeting with these dollars, $50 million towards the allocation formula for Minsky, $20 million for centers of excellence, a number of other initiatives there that you can see on the chart. Mr. Chair, maybe what I should do, since we're coming to the Health and Human Services area, and I know that there are some other questions here. Maybe skip over to a couple of the other areas and then come back to that.
I think we should do that, but I do have, if you're done with your higher education presentation, I've got a couple of individuals, Representative Carlson and Dorn, who want to ask questions. Let's take those, but skip over Health and Human for the moment. We'll try to finish off the others. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I find these percentage increases kind of funny-ducky here, because you come up with increases that, of course, are outside the increase in enrollment, which were very significant numbers at both the University of Minnesota and Minsky. What I want to know, being that you're underfunding their requests, and it goes back to the similar question that I had on property taxes, what are your assumptions when you're underfunding the University of Minnesota and Minsky relative to their requests by not recognizing enrollment? You're taking it away on the one hand and you're giving it back on the other, and then using a biennial number that gives you an artificially high percentage increase. But what are you assuming then will be the tuition increases under your budget?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, we're making assumptions about tuition increases in the neighborhood of 4 or 5%. And I think that both the Minsky system and the University of Minnesota talk about tuition increases at that level with the request fully funded. But in fact, I think that, I mean, they would probably both acknowledge that the significant increases in tuition in the last couple of years is basically how they funded those that higher student enrollment in the last 2 years, some of which isn't expected to continue going forward. The governor, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Carlson, when you talk about phony percentages, let me just be clear that I described at the outset there's two different reference points that you can look at. And this looks at the reference point of the current biennium, where we generally talk about what's the increase over the current biennium. And that's what these percentages are. Representative Carlson, as you note, in the forecast, there's a requirement to include an enrollment adjustment. If you look at the forecast as the reference point, then it's a smaller percentage increase. But I think what we're trying to do is be clear about funding over the current level.
Yeah.
So hopefully it's not misleading.
Representative Dorn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I wasn't quite done.
I
don't think I said misleading. If I did, I probably would stand by that. But I think I said funny ducky. it is misleading. I would concur with her if I said that. And Mr. Chairman, the point when we don't recognize the enrollment increases, and that means that we're not recognizing the real cost increases at both of our public systems. And the University of Minnesota indicated that when they testified before the higher ed division that their sections were at capacity. So when you're at capacity, when you begin to add sections or you need to add sections, that means that you're really having some major cost drivers that are not being recognized, and that's the whole point when we say these, or at least I say these numbers, are rather misleading. I'll start to use that phrase. The other...
I'd rather like the funny ducky one myself.
Yeah, that's... Now, sometimes I use the phrase turkey dance. We go through the turkey dance. I'll explain that one to you sometime, too, when I'm referring to that.
I want to see you do the turkey dance.
No, I think that when I use that, I'm talking about the other side of the aisle doing it.
Oh, okay.
But at any rate, I'll yield to Representative Dorn, other than to just simply say that clearly the testimony that both systems had was that 4 to 5% tuition increase was if they received their funding request. And so I think we all know that tuition is probably going to go up more than that. They provided us with the wheel. Some of you have seen the wheel. If you haven't, you should take a look at it. And that tells you at the various funding levels what tuition is going to go up. And I would say that from the testimony we've had and from what the wheel tells us, that we're probably talking about double-digit tuition increases again. And we had a regent that was before us when we were in the higher ed division, and his comment was that he had had a platform when he sought to win a position on the Board of Regents of keeping tuition low. And during his tenure, and he's just completed a term and was reelected for a second year, it's gone up 81%. And I refer to that as the privatization of our higher ed systems. And with all the fees that are now being charged by our K-12 school districts because they have no other alternative, I refer to that as the privatization of our public K-12 system. And I think clearly that's where the state of Minnesota seems to be going with the last budget that we had and the one that's before us again.
Representative Dorn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Carlson raised some of the points that I'm still not clear about, and I'm still not clear about them. But I'm trying to figure out the consistency between the 5.3% and the K-12 increase and the 10.3%, for example, in the University of Minnesota increase. I thought I heard you say that because in K-12 there were fewer students, there was more money, but in higher ed, where there was an enrollment increase, it seems like that wasn't taken into account. So it seems like, or from what I'm hearing, I'm still not clear that this is consistent, that one is based on an adjusted enrollment start and the other is based on a non-adjusted enrollment start. And can you explain my confusion to me so I'm no longer confused?
Commissioner. Kennedy, Representative Dorn, I'll take a stab at it. When we talked about the K-12 education area, we were talking about revenue per student because, in fact, the way the state funding is for K-12, there is a formula, a general education formula per student. That's not the case with the appropriations for higher education. There are some assumptions that are made in the forecast about student enrollment for the last 2 years, but in fact the appropriations are a set amount and not tied to a number of students. And so what I talk about is the percent increase over the current level of funding for higher education, because it isn't on a... That's the funding recommendation regardless of the number of students that are there, whereas in K-12 it is a per-student formula.
Okay, Commissioner, let's move on to agriculture.
Okay, Mr. Chairman and members, this chart is at the bottom of page 8, and basically this is an area where there aren't any changes to the current funding level for agriculture programs. And in fact, the governor has created a dairy enhancement tax credit program in his recommendations. Then moving on to the page on transportation, for the most part, this is a description of the kind of current law that occurs here, the on-course to deliver major projects ahead of schedule. That's the result, the continuation of the initiative from 2 years ago that continues on for the next 4 years. The governor also has made no change, fully funds the current forecast, the current level of programs for transit, for Metro Transit and outstate transit. And then furthermore, the governor's recommending a future dedication of the motor vehicle sales tax for transportation purposes, which would be phased in beginning in 2008. And in addition, the governor has a significant bonding proposal as part of his transportation package.
Representative O'Kremer, we haven't heard from you yet today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm going to go back to agriculture because I did have a couple questions there, if that's okay, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
I realize that it looks like the Department of Agriculture has no cuts and has no real money. Can you tell me how many dollars in fees we're raising through fees?
Commissioner or Mr. Showalter, I see you opening up a folder.
Mr. Chair, Representative Otremba, there are a number of fee increases recommended in the agriculture area. For the most part, these are to maintain a current level of support in particular activities, inspection activities. I don't have the specific number with me now, but we'll get back to you with that.
Representative Otremba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Who specifically are paying the fees?
Commissioner or Mr. Showalter?
Mr. Chair.
I know it's in the governor's budget, and I've seen it, Representative Trump, but I can't recall it myself either. Go
Mr.
ahead.
Chair, there's, my recollection is that somebody coming up here that can help answer this question.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, my understanding is that there are some of the inspection areas, fees have been increased in some of the inspection areas, and so, you know, particular entities that have to be inspected would pay those fee increases, as well as some applicator fees like fertilizer applicator, pesticide applicators, those, some of those fees are increased. And my understanding, Mr. Chair, is that these are some places where the Department of Agriculture had some indication that the fee payers were interested in maintaining a particular service level or in fact, where a fee might not be covering the cost currently. But I'll get the specific information on all those fees.
Representative Trumba.
Mr. Chair, specifically, I'd like to know what percentage of the fees are being paid for by the farmer themselves. And because in a lot of cases, when it's an inspection, it's actually a consumer benefit also. So, and then are these one-time raises, or are they going to continue to increase, or will they go back to the other level?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Otremba, my assumption is that these are the increase. These are increased, and they'll stay at the increased level.
Thank you.
Okay, please proceed, Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and members, the chart on the bottom of page 9 is the public safety area, and there we talked a little bit earlier on about some of the increased sentencing for meth offenses and sex offenders. This is there's particular funding set aside in the governor's budget proposal for this, and as I mentioned, long term there would be some changes in the Department of Corrections in inmate caseload, but in the near term, the costs are in the courts and public defenders. There's a significant increase in funding, even under current law, to add the increased caseload in the Department of Corrections. I mentioned the predatory offender registry and some increased supervision of sex offenders. Some technology upgrades, the live scan support, added support of the live scan machines, and the increase in the automated fingerprinting technology. An increase in the 911 fee to improve the public safety radio system. This, Mr. Chair, is a fee that there's currently, the fee would go up 25 cents, and it would cover both a backlog of existing telephone company payments as well as expanding, paying for the debt to expand the radio service in the couple of places where it's expanded to date, and then some increased funding for law enforcement training. Mr. Chair and members, the next chart just highlights a couple of initiatives that the governor has in the military area, increasing state support for the tuition reimbursement for National Guard, adding funding incentives for the reenlistment incentives, and then also there's a provision that exempts income, active duty income in the state from state income taxes. Again, sort of the last chart, or the chart at the bottom of the page, shows the several areas where there were, the governor was recommended maintaining current funding levels in agriculture, transit, arts. There's no cuts to local government aid. There actually are a few other areas. I mentioned military affairs, vets affairs, human rights, a few of the areas where the governor has recommended the current funding level with no changes. And Mr. Chair, finally, just to, I guess, make a pitch for the documents that we have out on our website for more detailed information.
Okay, anyone have any questions besides the Health and Human Services area? Representative Anderson.
Is there any money in the governor's budget for private colleges?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, funding is basically maintained the current level of funding with a modest modification in the financial aid program. And the state grant program is the place where private institutions receive funding. And I would say that it's the only change in the financial aid funding was to allow for a slight increase in the living and miscellaneous expense as a result of some increased federal dollars are redeployed inside the grant program. But there's no specific increase for private colleges.
What percentage of the grants goes to private colleges versus public schools?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, I don't have that number right now, but I certainly will get back to you on that.
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner, if I could just jump back to transportation. You said at the end, I think he addresses future needs in conjunction with the $7 billion 10-year transportation plan, and my understanding is most of that is bonding.
Yes, Mr.
Commissioner.
Well, Commissioner, if you could give me a breakdown, not today, obviously, but of the past trends for, say, the last 10 years on the amount of bonding money we spent versus general fund money for highway construction, highway repairs, because I have a suspicion we're heading towards the way California does things, which is to borrow money for current operating expenses. And I believe you'll have to show me the data, however, maybe I'm wrong, that there's a large increase in bonding, and that's compensating for what we're not spending out of the general fund. And I happen to used to be a saying that pay as you go. I'd hate to be borrowing for general operating expenses.
Mr. Chair, Representative Huntley, just to kind of clarify on your question, you mentioned the general fund because there's very few times historically that general fund money has been used for highways. I'm assuming that what you'd like to see is the highway funded out of the gas tax and yeah, motor fuel fees versus bonding.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner, that's correct. What's borrowing and what's paid out of whatever the revenues are for that year.
Yep, okay.
Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question about the governor's proposal on enhanced sex offender management. Perhaps you know that there's several neighborhoods in Minneapolis that have more than half of all of the sex offenders in the whole state located in our communities. It's big over-concentration. And when we've had hearings to try to get other counties, cities, suburbs to take their fair share, they don't all come from our communities, you know, but they're all concentrated after they come out. Is there anything in the governor's budget to address that issue and work towards deconcentration? Is he heard that plea?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Representative Clark, I know there is funding for housing for sex offenders, but I'm not sure that it is exactly how it's distributed, but there is funding for housing, so maybe that there's an opportunity to tie some strings to that housing fund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll take your suggestion and see if we can't figure that out. Thank you.
Okay, members, some of you have patiently sat around waiting to get back to Health and Human Services. Now is the time. And I've got, I don't want to take this right up to 3 o'clock because we obviously have session, but let's take it for a few minutes here. I've got Representative Greiling, Dorn, Otremba, and Abler, and maybe we should just go through those four. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try to be shorter on Health and Human Services. My question is, you know, I am trying to make sure we have more money for education, as Representative Bradley said, as well as for health care, of course. And I'm concerned long-term about this direction of having people go from Minnesota Care, where they're working and paying what they can, and then they have this gap until they qualify for GAMC, and then once they qualify, it's virtually impossible for them to work and still qualify. And so I'm just, it seems to me, unless we're gambling on an awful lot of people gambling without health insurance, that long term this is going to cost us more money without people working and paying what they can, not to mention the lack of opportunity for people to feel worthy about working and paying what they can. Am I missing something here?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Greiling, I'm not sure that I can specifically answer your question here. In fact, one of the things that we looked at in the whole budget development process is where our state spending is out of line in comparison with other states. We looked at the fact that we are a high-spending state. Where is it, you know, in fact, when we talk about our spending in education, that may have slipped over historical spending levels. In the healthcare area and health and human services is a place where we spend more than the national average, and we're within the top couple of states in terms of our spending per capita on health and human services. So we looked at surrounding states and some of the programs that are available in surrounding states, and in fact with the Minnesota Care program still requires a very large state subsidy, even though people are paying premiums and they're getting limited benefits. And I think it was some of that complexity between the programs that are funded out of the general fund, medical assistance and GAMC, with different eligibility levels, and in fact a number of people in Minnesota Care. When we move to this getting approval for the federal waiver so that we might be able to get some federal reimbursement, and then the federal folks said as a condition, if people are eligible for medical assistance, you have to serve them there first. So, in fact, there are people who have been in the Minnesota Care program paying premiums, and, you know, we're not going to be able to get federal reimbursement for that as long as those folks are eligible to be included in medical assistance. And so, it's been somewhat of a trade-off, and I think that we looked, as I said, at this area where spending was so much higher than the national average and among the highest per capita in other states, and then tried to take into account the priorities. Children being the priority, so there are no changes there. Families with children being a next level of priority, and single adults as kind of the next level of priority, and try to maintain a program that still provides for a real safety net, knowing that, in fact, there are some changes here, and that the current level is unsustainable. And so really provided for the General Assistance Medical Care Program, where there's an allowance for a spend down, which hasn't been there for the last couple of years. In fact, in the Minnesota Care Program, there was a limited benefit set when you reached the cap and the maximum. You didn't have that ability. And the objective was to define a safety net program that truly served the needy, people with some high unexpected health problems, that they would be served. And so, as we looked at the surrounding states, there's only a couple of surrounding states, Michigan and Missouri, that have a program for single adults without children, and it's much more modest at 25% and 35% of federal poverty guidelines. So in fact, the General Assistance Medical Care, as some were expecting that that program would be eliminated because we get no federal reimbursement. This is a totally state-funded program that has been expanded to allow for a spend-down. So to allow people with some chronic health problems to be able to be eligible for the programs if they have an unusual health expense.
Representative Thorne is no longer here. Representative Otremba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My concern are the cuts to families with children. In my area, that's basically family-owned businesses, farmers, looking at the numbers for the spend down, I don't know how you spend down on a farm because we haven't been able to add back our losses or depreciation anyway, like on our Schedule F. So it's actually an accelerated asset test in the first place. And they can't afford insurance. So what are we saving by cutting families with children on Minnesota Care?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Otremba, I'm not as familiar with the spend-down portion of that proposal. I'm afraid that I don't know the details enough to tell you the exact savings in that area. We can certainly get back to you on that. We move from 275% of the federal poverty guidelines to 190%. Which we saw as still being higher than any of the surrounding states. Again, I'm unfamiliar with the spend out the asset tests and how farmers are affected by that.
So, Mr. Chair,
it's
pretty steep. It probably comes to about if at the most, 21,000 after their spend down is what they can make, and that includes what they have to do to keep their, not only their home, but their farm expenses, etc. And so I would like to know also what it's going to cost the state because they can't afford insurance. I have a couple, I've had phone calls already of people like crying because what are they going to do? There's no way they can afford. I had an example is last summer I had a call from a farm family. They had a baby. And they had a $5,000 deductible because that was because their depreciation schedule and their income loss made their premiums too high. So they had a $5,000 deductible. They had a baby. The baby was $10,000. So they had the $5,000 deductible. Then they had the 80-20 on the next $5,000. And the baby got sick. They went to the clinic, and the clinic turned them away because they didn't have their entire bill paid. They were told to go to the emergency room.
But that's free.
But that's not free because they've got a $5,000 deductible. So it's a new calendar year and it's another $5,000. And that's scenario after scenario after scenario with small business owners, family owners, and family farmers. This is a huge hit to people who are, assets to the community. They haven't been paid a fair price since the 70s for their products. And Minnesota Care wasn't the best program, but it was at least something. And now they have nothing. In fact, when I went to the clinic to talk about this with the executive director, she said, tell them to file bankruptcy. And that's not a solution. And so I'd like to know what it saves us and what it's going to cost us.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Otremba, I don't have the specific savings on this part of the proposal, but would certainly try to get back to you on this. And Mr. Chair, I don't know if you would consider inviting Commissioner Goodnow to come to this committee, if not the Health and Human Services Committee, for some of the details on this proposal. I know he will be better able to answer your questions than I.
Okay, Commissioner, well, thank you for coming and answering our questions today. We are going to have a hearing at some point in the future where we talk about Health and Human Services more specifically, so maybe we can save that question for then. Before we go, I want to introduce Dan Nelson. He's our new page over in the corner, Dan Wave. Thank you for being here. Members, our next meeting will be a week from today, on Monday. Thank you. Meeting adjourned.